You are Locked On Pacers, your daily Indiana Pacers podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Welcome in to another edition of the Locked On Pacers podcast, where we, of course, talk about the Indiana Pacers, as always. My name's Tony East. I cover the team for Forbes and the West Side Community News, and today, for the first time in like 10 days, I get to talk about a win. The Pacers beat the Wizards 116-100. Wizards 14-11, so a pretty capable win against a good team. Spencer Dinwiddie didn't play for the Wizards, but Bradley Beal played and played well. So it was good for the Pacers to look convincingly better than a team like that, especially a Wizards team that has given them absolute fits in the last 6 months. They beat them four times last season, five if you count the play-in game. Beat them early this season in that overtime thriller. So the Pacers finally exercise their Wizards demons. They beat their former player, Aaron Holiday, in a convincing fashion. So I'll talk about that game, of course. And then they did some low-hanging fruit improvement things that I've talked about on several recent podcasts that I want to talk about, and how the Pacers can continue to do that, how important those things are to continue to do. And then at the end, a guy I haven't talked about in a while, but I did a whole segment and show about O'Shea Brissett should play more. And O'Shea was very good in this game, and I want to talk about his performance and if I think he should stay in the rotation or how they should handle his minutes going forward, because some of him is playing as Justin Holiday being out, but some of his play has been earned by good minutes. So where he stands going forward is very crucial for this team. But let's just start with the game. 116-100 final score, which sounds close. It was almost close enough that it would have ruined their games decided by less than 5 points net, but it was not that close at all. The Pacers went up by nine with a few seconds left in the first quarter after a three-pointer, and the game was never closer than that. It was double-figure lead for all the second and third quarters. Wizards got it to eight right at the beginning of the fourth. Didn't matter. Pacers kept their foot on the gas for a full game. Very rare from them to do something like that. And they actually lose the second half by 5 points, but it didn't matter. They dominated the first half. We're up 11 at halftime and just like cruised the whole way. They matched every Wizards mini little run in the second half. They got good shooting. They had good defense. They were getting buckets from their defense, which is something they were not doing as much when they were struggling significantly last week. 13 fast break points. Wizards only had six. So that was a big thing for them. And they really controlled the game from start to finish. And it was kind of speared by, to me at least, their defense. They were making the Wizards take shots that the Wizards aren't really comfortable taking. The Wizards only took 15 threes in this game. Very unusual. I think Pat Boylan, when he was doing his post-game questioning for Valley Sports, said that that was the fewest three-point attempts by a team in a game this season. I have not researched that myself, but Pat's research is typically better than mine anyway, so I'm inclined to believe him. But to only see them take 15 threes was impressive defense by the Pacers with closeouts and running them off the line. And the Wizards don't take a ton of threes. They're 27th in the league, but they take over 30 a game still for a team that ranks 27th in the league. So impressive that the Pacers were able to defend them in that way and make them take shots that they're less comfortable with. In turn, the Wizards not driving as much, don't take as many free throws, aren't able to get as many offensive rebounds, right? That was a good defensive performance from the Pacers in that. Sure, the Wizards, it looks like their percentage of shooting is high, but they were taking a lot of twos or a lot of tougher shots that weren't as valuable as they like in terms of shot quality throughout the course of the game. So that's where their defense stood out to me. That was one of their best perimeter defense games of the season in terms of getting guys to not shoot the shots that they are so typically strong with over the course of a whole game. And of course, when you defend that way where your closeouts are important and you're running guys off the line, you have to be really good defending around the rim. Miles Turner, as usual, four blocks, was excellent at that. Sabonis even had a nice defensive game with a block. Caris LeVert had three blocks. You know, he was deterring some guards who tried to get that weak stuff in the basket around him. So nice, impressive Pacers defensive performance. And then the other factor of their strong defense was lots of steals, 10 steals in this game, four from Duarte and three from Sabonis, most of which, like I mentioned earlier, leading to those runouts, letting them control the pace, letting them get those easy buckets. So it was really impressive defensive performance for this team that they weren't playing necessarily bad defense last week, I would say. You know, the Bucks game, I guess you could say that they had some bad defensive moments, but it was mostly their offense that was struggling, but they needed a really strong defensive game to spur their offense in this one. And it definitely helped and definitely got them the momentum they needed, especially early in the game when they established their lead. But a good Pacers win is not without its strong offensive performance. 116 points is a lot in the NBA this year. Pacers shoot well from two. They shoot well from three. They, big stat here, 95.5% from the free throw line, 21 of 22. O'Shea missed one in the first half, and they made every other free throw they took the whole game. Sabonis was 8 for 8 from the line. So good finishing game from the Pacers in general. They had good turnover numbers until the last couple of minutes. They had a few sloppy ones that let the Wizards cut it from like 12 to 6 in the last 2 minutes. They had good block numbers, like I said, good steal numbers. 25 of their 43 makes were assisted, dominated the rebounding game, 13 offensive rebounds. They really did a nice job with the possession game between the steals and the offensive rebounds. So basically every stat that's tracked, that doesn't necessarily mean every stat means that it contributes to winning, but every stat that is tracked that you'd say, yeah, if they do a lot of this, they'll win. The Pacers did well in that number in this game. And the big story scoring-wise was Sabonis having 30 every time the Pacers play the Wizards. One of their two big men is going to have some sort of opportunity to do well against them. Daniel Gafford, for all the stuff he's good at, defense is not necessarily one of them. He couldn't really handle Sabonis' strength, and Montrez did his best to deter Sabonis around the basket and did okay, but that's kind of when Trez was in there banging bodies with him more. Sabonis was able to get involved and, you know, hit Malcolm Brogdon on a back cut or two. I think he had O'Shea Brissett for a bucket in a similar fashion like that. He had his passing going with those 6 assists and 10 rebounds as well. He was fantastic in this game. We'll talk more about him in the next segment and things that went well, but a well-rounded performance, right? They had 6 guys in double figures. Duarte shoots 50% for 13 points. Hit a big run, providing 3 in the first half. Caris LeVert had 19 points and shot 50%. That was nice from him. And Caris, speaking of defense earlier, Rick Carlisle crediting Caris LeVert for playing his best defensive game of the season on the podium after the game. When I asked Caris about it, he said, you know, Beal was 12 for 19 with 34 points. He doesn't feel like his defense was that impressive, but he was up in guys' jerseys the whole game and clearly giving more effort on that end. I actually got 2 or 3 tweets tagging me of people saying, no, Caris is playing good defense tonight. And I agree. He definitely was exerting more effort on that end of the floor than a typical Caris LeVert game. So 19 points and good defense from LeVert. Brogdon, 17 points, 8 assists, more point guardy from him. And then Brissett and Lamb both providing double figure scoring nights off the bench. The end of the first quarter, I was sitting next to James Boyd, the Indianapolis Star writer, and Rick rolled out a lineup of Brad Wanamaker, Jeremy Lamb, Keelan Martin, O'Shea Brissett, and Sabonis. And there was about 2.5 minutes left in the first quarter. And I said, James, they might not score the rest of the quarter with this group. And I was looking up like random little nicknames for Rick Carlisle going with lineups like this. Radical Rick came to mind. And I thought this group might not score for 1.5 minutes. They didn't. And then they found a way to get some buckets with O'Shea Brissett hitting some threes and Brad Wanamaker hitting a floater, I think, to close the quarter, right? So they got the production from that unit. And that was kind of emblematic of something else that guided the Pacers in this game is getting 32 points from their second unit was really huge, especially with McConnell out, with Holiday out. They've been really lacking production when they have to go to their second unit. In this game, that was not the case. Those guys were able to be good together, and Sabonis was obviously helpful, but also good when they were mixed in with the starters, right? Wanamaker making it so Brogdon doesn't have to carry the creation load all game, and Keelan Martin finally finding his stroke from deep, and Jeremy Lamb, same deal, finding his stroke from the outside. And again, O'Shea Brissett finding his stroke from the outside. And O'Shea in general had a wonderful, wonderful game off the bench. There's a reason he played nearly 30 minutes, one of his highest minute games of the season. In fact, his second highest minute game of the season. He was very impactful for that second unit. So basically, and Carlisle said this on the stand after the game, pretty much everyone that played well or played in a way that you expect them to. And again, I'll talk about this next segment, but something that the Pacers have struggled with a lot this season is they don't have a role player step up in games. Like they'll get this Sabonis game where he has 30, 10, and 6, and Brogdon will have 17 and 8 on only 13 shots. And then they'll only have like one other guy who kind of performs well and everybody else kind of slumps or falls to the wayside. This game, they had that game from Brogdon and that game from Sabonis, and then everyone else kind of filled their role well on both ends. Duarte playing good D and O, LeVert playing good D and O, O'Shea Brissett playing good defense and offense. They got that from the guys that they needed to step up, and they got a win. And for this team to suck last week so much that every podcast I did and everyone I listened to about the team and all the words I said or read, excuse me, that were very accurate that said this team might be at the lowest point. They've been in a long time and they really need to turn it around. They had their first 2 days off of the season at home this past weekend. That sounds like nothing. It's only 2 days. But Rick Carlisle is a coach who's heavy on rest. He's talked about how he is one of the few coaches in the league that really values rest days. And yeah, they had one on the road this season, but it was in Denver. And that was like their only true rest day, as he calls it. They had, for the first time this weekend, a true rest day. And then, like I talked about with Derek Schultz yesterday, as they described it on Sunday, a training camp style practice. I think those two things in tandem really kind of helped this team mentally and physically reset because they looked really good in this game. And they didn't play like so differently from the games where they were really bad. They just kind of cleaned up a lot of errors or like really got everybody involved in a way that made everybody feel like they were still contributing and playing in a meaningful role, but also still got the ball to the right guys, got the right shots, allowed everybody to succeed in their own way. So I think they had a really meaningful weekend, and we'll see if that holds going forward, because this team's never won more than two games in a row this season. They've been wildly inconsistent. So definitely putting the cart before the horse to talk about one game turning around their season. I'm not calling this a turnaround, but I do think this past weekend, given what we know about Rick's coaching style and this team needing a two-day break, they've played the most games in the league, or they had as of this weekend. I'm not sure if that's still the case. Certainly important for them to have a nice practice-filled and rest-filled weekend as they progress into an important week of home games against teams that, you know, the Warriors next Monday are really talented, but teams that this week with Wizards, Knicks, Mavs are good but winnable games that if the Pacers can win three of the four at home that they have this coming week, their season is at least in a place where you say, yes, if they, you know, play like that a little more, they can salvage this. So this was the first step in doing something like that. They looked very good, and they did it by doing stuff that seems like low-hanging fruit for improvement that I've talked about so much with guests and by myself on last week's show. So let's talk about some of those things, how they're able to do it, how they can focus on repeating them. But first, let's talk about two awesome groups of people. First up, the good folks over at Truebill, because do you know why free trials renew without your consent? Because it's a business scam that is out to get you. Do not let greedy corporations pocket your money. Download Truebill to take control of your subscriptions. Truebill is the new app that helps you identify and stop paying for subscriptions you don't need, want, or simply forgot about. On average, people who use Truebill save up to $720 per year, because companies make subscriptions hard to cancel. Well, Truebill makes it super simple. You link your accounts, they'll cancel your unwanted subscriptions in just a tap. They have a concierge that's there to help you cancel those unwanted subscriptions so you don't have to do it. And they have over 2 million users that have helped save over $100 million. Don't fall for subscription scams. Start canceling today. Truebill.com/LockedOnNBA. Go right now. Truebill.com/LockedOnNBA could save you thousands a year. Truebill.com/LockedOnNBA. Let's also talk about the great folks over at Theragun. Stop stressing about the daily life weigh on your body, whether you're an elite athlete or someone like me talking about elite athletes, just trying to make it through the day tension-free. Theragun can help. It's a handheld percussive therapy device that releases your deepest muscle tension using a scientifically calibrated combo of depth, speed, and power, and it's as quiet as an electric toothbrush. The Gen 4 Theragun doesn't just feel good. It gets to the source of pain by relieving tension using Theragun's signature percussive therapy, which goes 60% deeper than vibration alone. Whether you want to treat your muscle tension from working out or an injury, there's no substitute for the Theragun Gen 4. The OLED screen and design make you feel like you're holding something from the future. Just go to their site and check it out. And the Theragun app learns from your behaviors and suggests guided routines. It's trusted by over 250 professional sports teams like Real Madrid and athletes like Paul George, DeAndre Hopkins, and Maria Sharapova, and hundreds of thousands of customers. Try Theragun for 30 days starting at only $199. Go to therabody.com/lockedon right now and get your Gen 4 Theragun today. That's therabody.com/lockedon, therabody.com/lockedon. Thank you very much for making Locked On Pacers your first listen today. Why not check out Locked On Wizards for that losing perspective to the Indiana Pacers at home? This was a big game for the Pacers in cleaning up some of the stuff that just felt like not obvious changes, because Rick Carlisle is an NBA head coach and has been for forever. He would see obvious changes, but stuff that like the Pacers were struggling with that they need to try to fix or like put an effort into fixing so that they can play better on a consistent basis. And something I've talked about is balance. They have one of their strengths is balance. They have a lot of really good players, but not a lot of great players. And a way they can make that an advantage for them is not having one guy shoot too much. Like, no one on their team needs to be shooting 20 times for them to win a game. You know, that's kind of actually been killer for them. You know, I went through the record to show that in their games where they have a guy take 20 shots, things typically don't go well for them. Last week, they didn't have anyone take a ton of shots against the Heat, but they definitely had some 20 shot performances. I'm trying to pull up the game specifically and completely failing to pull up box scores on Basketball Reference because I'm apparently not very smart. But, you know, Brogdon took 20 shots in the game against Atlanta last Wednesday when they played Minnesota. They had a couple 20-shot guys, Brogdon again in that game, right? So that was something they went away from that's kind of been one of their strengths is sharing it, moving it around, having the ball pop around the perimeter. That's been one of their strengths. And in this game, finally, we saw the Pacers go back to that a little bit. They had no one – well, LeVert took 18 shots. No one else took more than 15. Sabonis took 15. Brogdon at 13. And then they really shared it below that because they had a ton of guys between 4 and 8. And that's kind of a dangerous recipe. They were a little over-reliant on role players, honestly. But they did a good job of not hammering one guy or one matchup too much in a way that allows the other team to adjust – and make it so your balance isn't an advantage, right? Duarte, 8 shots. Miles Turner, 5 shots. O'Shea Brissett, 6 shots. Jeremy Lamb, 8 shots. Keelan Martin, 5 shots. Brad Wanamaker, 4 shots. That's a dangerous game to play because those guys can be a little inconsistent, but in general, not hammering one of your three guys who deservedly take more shots was a smart move by the Pacers in this game because that's been something that they've been chasing so much. And lo and behold, they have 6 guys in double figures in this game. The 3 guys that played that were not in double figures were Turner, who was excellent on defense, Keelan Martin, who hit 2 huge 3s, and Brad Wanamaker, who had, you know, and for him at least, 4 assists, 1 turnover. He was actually controlling the offense in a way that he hasn't in a while this season. That's his second good game filling in for TJ McConnell in a row. So they got back that balance that they were lacking so often last week in a way that was very noticeable in their struggles, at least to me. So that was a good first step. And that's something they can focus on every game because, you know, they called some plays I was noticing early on in a way that actually surprised me. I didn't think Carlisle would call a ton of plays, but they kind of went away from that and were just letting the ball do its thing. And the ball finds the energy, I believe, is the quote that is so often used by coaches and people who study the game. And they were letting the ball find the energy, moving it around the perimeter. That got them a lot of open threes and letting the right guy attack the right matchups or getting it into the paint like they're so good at when they actually drive and get those paint touches. They were doing much better at that today and letting the right guy drive and attack. So that was a good start for them in terms of finding a balance. And that's something they can easily, to me at least, continue to do. Don't let anyone try to take over the game. Don't let one matchup dictate the way you play. Continue to be the Pacers. Share it. Work inside out. Work the ball around. Don't necessarily take the first good shot you get. Always. Sometimes take the first good shot because they get open threes somewhat easily. But, you know, work it around. Try to find the best shot you can possibly get. There is a balance between the Nate McMillan, always be searching for a better shot, and the Rick Carlisle sometimes teams of shoot the first open shot you get. And they found it in this game by searching for that balance. That was one of the things I thought I talked about that they went back to. More Sabonis emphasis. Talked about that with Derek Schultz yesterday. Talked about it on several shows this season, to be honest. And it's not that they go away from Sabonis. It's just that he's not getting the ball as much in some of their struggling games in advantageous positions for him to be him. Like, there was some good written content and spoken content from a lot of people about they couldn't get him the ball in the middle of the zone against the Heat last week, and they couldn't get him involved in some actions, you know, as a screener, as a handoff guy in general. And that is where he excels so much and where he's been a driver for this Pacers team. And, you know, Rick said after the game he didn't call plays for Sabonis. I think he said he called 2 or 3 total plays the whole game for Sabonis to get the ball in a certain spot. Most of the time he was getting the ball in this game was naturally through, like I said earlier, in the balance thing, through the flow of what they were doing, through the reversals, through the drives, through the whatever. They did say that in their training camp-esque practice on Sunday, one of the things they had some focus on was pocket passes on the roll, right? Here's Sabonis. He set a great screen. He's rolling. That pocket pass has been there, and it's something that guys like LaVert and Brogdon, who are doing well. Brogdon is doing well passing this season. LaVert not so much, but they hadn't really been looking for that as much. That was there much more in this game. And then Sabonis has the ball in the paint with his dribble, with decisions to make. That's when he's so good. And he can go at a guy like Daniel Gafford or spin around and find a shooter or just draw attention in a way that gives him an advantage. So one, he got the ball more in this game in general in advantageous positions, in the paint, in the spots he can actually create his own shot in the post. You know, stuff that seems so simple, but has been something they've struggled with. And it's not that they go away from him on purpose. It's just the way Rick feels the game is flowing or the way there's a good matchup or something. And it never, you know, never in the moment, like any one possession, have I felt like, man, they really should have gone to Sabonis there. Sometimes there's a post like mismatch. It's obvious that they miss, but you know, it's very rarely an imbalance that lasts so long that you notice it until the game is over and you go, wow, they went away from Sabonis more than I thought in that game. And in this game, they did not have that happen. Sabonis dominated the Wizards, 30-10-6, easy 30-10-6, 11 for 15 from the field, 8 for 8 from the line. He was excellent, excellent in this game. And lo and behold, getting him more involved seems to be good for this Pacers basketball team. It's not surprising, but it's getting him involved in the right way. You know, it's not just hammering the ball to him and expecting him to do everything, right? A lot of his creation is via screens, via handoffs, via cuts. But it is finding a way to get him involved in the way that caters to his strength, because he is very good at the stuff he does and creating for others via those things that he is so good at. So that's something else they went back to in this game that was really good. Another one is, talked about this with Derek yesterday, this is a very basic level thing. The threes went in. You know, when you talk about Sabonis getting more involved, that's something they can go back to, right? Threes going in is just, you got to make your shots. And that's something Carlisle always stresses is not random, but, you know, shots going in can be varying from night to night. We see that in the NBA. Like, you can have an off night even with good looks. You know, defense you can control, shot making you can't necessarily always control. So it's not necessarily something the Pacers can hang their hat on going forward, but they do generate in general, I think, pretty good looks from three. It's just sometimes it takes them a long time to get it, or it's the wrong guy who's open or whatever. You know, they're open threes, they just aren't necessarily high quality threes. In this game, they only took 23 threes, so maybe they were a little more focused on quality. They hit 9 of them. They did a good job of picking and choosing the right ones. And of their 9 threes, by the way, 7 come from the bench. O'Shea Brissett with 3, Jeremy Lamb with 2, Keelan Martin with 2. They were really looking inside more. Hint, hint, Sabonis getting more involved. You know, Karis only hit 1 3, Duarte hit 1 3. That was all the starters' three-point makes in this entire game, right? So very impressive three-point shooting accuracy night. And I think they were a little more selective with the threes, which isn't necessarily good or bad, but it was something that in this game in particular was advantageous for them and something that they can potentially do going forward. The last low-hanging fruit improvement thing, and this is something I can't quantify. You know me, I like to dig into the numbers or share a stat that kind of shows you how the Pacers can improve or something they're doing bad. Effort was there. They were playing, as Rick Carlisle has said, with force on defense. It was very obvious, and that was evident, like I said, in the first segment via their strong defense. It was clear that they were closing out well, defending well around the paint, getting into guys, being physical in a way that sometimes they just aren't. And that's what's so frustrating as a fan of the team is if you are a fan, you want to go watch your team, give it their 100% every game, and you see them beat the Jazz, and you see them beat Sixers and the Bulls, and you go, yeah, you know, that's the kind of stuff that fans think is awesome. Play like that every game. And then they don't. And that's very frustrating because in this game against the Wizards, they certainly played with some force and some oomph. You know, that's not a technical term, but they played with some mustard and some oomph on defense that really set them up for success on both ends of the floor. It allowed guys to feel like they're having an impact and playing well, even when they're not getting the ball as much, right? Just a lot of pros from playing like that, playing with force, playing with effort, especially on defense, but in general, it kind of via osmosis, I would say, gets to the offense and helps the team on that end of the floor as well when they feel like they're playing that way. And so setting the tone via their effort and not coming out looking lethargic or flat with a slow start was really good. And they did a very good job of doing that the entire game, right? This isn't a low-hanging fruit thing. This is just something that they've had a lot this season is they have a stretch every game where they look dead and they lose that stretch 12-0 and they lose by 4, right? If that stretch didn't happen, they would have won. That happened so often. That did not happen in this game. They had no stretch where you thought, wow, they look horrible, or what are they doing? Why are they out of their game, right? I'm not even sure what the longest Wizards run was, but it couldn't have been more than, you know, 5 or something. I think it was a six-something run in the first quarter, like not even that big. The longest run of the whole game for either team was 8, right? So that kind of shows you what happened in this game is that the Pacers did a good job of limiting the Wizards' runs and consistent effort and force the whole game. And you know, if you're a fan of this Pacers team, you love to see that because that is something that if they can mentally focus for a whole game and do that and play like this, they can win games going forward. So of those things that I said, what's repeatable? Balance, obviously repeatable. It's a choice who shoots every possession and how they try to get those shots. More Sabonis emphasis, more paint emphasis in general. They had over 60, I believe, points in the paint tonight. Yeah, 64 points in the paint. Not only a Sabonis thing, but just keep attacking the paint in general. They're so much better when they play that way. Threes going in might happen some nights, might not happen other nights. But the way they shot the threes tonight, I thought was a little different and something noteworthy to watch. And then continue to play with effort. So it is stuff that they can mostly do. Some of it, again, is variance and just on or off shooting nights, but stuff that is repeatable. And so it's encouraging that they had a game that they can look at the film and say, do that again. We'll see if they actually do or not. Let's talk about a guy who played tonight and played well. And I had put a lot of emphasis on him before the season. And I penciled him in as a lock in the Pacers rotation. And yet he has only played in 15 of their now 26 games. That is O'Shea Brissett, who played very well tonight. Very well tonight. Let's talk about O'Shea Brissett, where he stands on this team, how he was able to impact a victory. But first, let's take a little break and talk about the good folks over at Boost Mobile. You listen to podcasts for the power of knowledge. You switch to Boost Mobile for the power of saving money because with Boost, you get the power of a free 5G phone so you can listen to all the latest episodes, the power of 3 unlimited data lines for $30 a month per line, so your family can harness all that brain power too, and the power of one of America's largest 5G networks. So you can do it all at the speed of 5G. With all that money you'll save and all that knowledge you'll gain, just how powerful will you become? Switch to Boost Mobile and find out. Get a free Samsung Galaxy A32 5G when you switch to one of America's largest 5G networks. More power to save. Boost Mobile. Disclaimer, free phone limited to new customers and one per line. Additional restrictions apply. Offer and coverage not available everywhere or for all phones and networks. See boostmobile.com for more details. Sometimes it feels like when O'Shea Brissett has a nice game like this, that I'm always worried I'm going to come into this segment and just pat myself on the back too much. And I don't want to say like I'm right or anything like that, because I don't know that he's better than Torrey Craig or better than Keelan Martin or these guys who are playing ahead of him. Like, Keelan's had a good season. Torrey Craig clearly has a valuable role on this team a lot of the time. But sometimes O'Shea plays like this, and it just makes me very confused that he doesn't play every game. Like, he was very good and useful for this team last year, started for a reason, knocked down threes, played good defense, and then just stopped being a part of the Pacers rotation. He's only played more than 10 minutes before tonight, five times for the Pacers this season. Five times he's played more than 10 minutes in a game. Tonight, Rick Carlisle turns to him, and the context needed before we really dig into this discussion of O'Shea in this game and O'Shea going forward is Justin Holiday is out with COVID, so there's an open hole in the rotation there. Torrey Craig was sick earlier this week, which kind of impacted his minutes and allowed O'Shea to play more in the first place. So that's how he was able to get into some games, right? He played two of the games he played over 10 minutes were on the first against Atlanta and on the third against Miami. So very recent performances. So there are some external factors allowing him to get more minutes that aren't related to his performance in games. That said, he gets more minutes in this game for the same reasons, and he is really taking advantage, right? He plays against tonight. He plays 28 minutes and 45 seconds. That is his second most of the season behind the overtime win over the Heat earlier this season. If you take out overtime, he might have even played the most regular season minutes. I don't have that in front of me in any game this season. And he took advantage. 4 for 6 from the field, hit all of his threes, made a free throw, 8 rebounds. 2 offensive rebounds, both of which were huge. Like I said, the Wizards were never on a run, but he got offensive rebounds that were like the Pacers kind of needed a bucket, and he extended the possession in a way with his energy that really allowed them to, you know, keep playing and continue to have some momentum on their side. His 2 offensive rebounds both felt really huge. And Scott Agnes was asking after the game, I don't know if this will be his story or not from the game, but it probably will be, I would guess. Asked guys and O'Shea, like, you know, TJ McConnell's out. Do you like providing that energy? Are you that guy that provides that energy for this team? And they're like, yeah, O'Shea can be our energy guy. Every time he makes a 3, he's got his arm up, he's excited, and he gave a fan a high five after making a 3 tonight, right? Like, he gets really into these games. And so he's an energy guy. That's helpful, right? He was really impactful in that way. +7 for him, second highest on the team. Only Sabonis had a higher plus minus. So he had that sort of impact. And I've always kind of just thought, and I understand this year that, you know, he's not making the free throws at all prior to tonight. Actually, 36% from 3 prior to tonight. He got that up, but that is after hitting threes at a decent clip last week to elevate that number. He is at a low volume of threes, but up to 36% from 3, he was struggling prior. And given his last season shooting, what I was going to say is we know he's a good defender, right? He did a very good job in that role last season, or at least a solid defender. He can shoot it pretty well from the outside, and all of his threes are so easy. They're all catch and shoots. He's got a nice high-arcing shot. He's a good finisher on the rim. He improved his handle this summer in summer league and prior to summer league. He just has value in a way that it always is surprising to me when he didn't play all these games. And like, I got it to a point that I didn't think it was worthy of a segment. Like, Torrey Craig had that awesome game in Brooklyn and has definitely been their best wing defender at times this season in a way that you go, okay, I get why he should play. And Keelan Martin's added to his game in a way, and Rick really likes him in a way that makes you think he should play. And Justin Holiday's obviously always going to play. He's the best of the names I just said. But that means O'Shea's the odd man out. But, you know, a lot of times I think O'Shea can be better or provide more than both Keelan or Torrey Craig have given the Pacers this season. And this game just added to that fuel to me that, you know, 3 for 3 from 3 will always make you think a guy can contribute. But it wasn't just that. It was those effort plays on the offensive glass. It was strong defense in general, fueling a bench unit that needed energy and a spark and hadn't had it for a while. They really have been struggling on the second unit without Holiday and McConnell. I just think O'Shea should be a guy who plays every game. I said that before the season when we were trying to figure out exactly what the Pacers rotation should look like, and I kind of maintain it now. I don't think he should play over Justin Holiday when he comes back, but, you know, Keelan's playing every game and Torrey Craig was playing every game. I think I would play O'Shea over both of those guys and try to get him in the rotation, because We know he can finish around the rim. His three ball's falling again. Like, after this 3-for-3 game, he's probably about 40% for the season now. His sample size is incredibly small to boot. He's 12-for-28 on the season now after this game from three. That is 43%, right? So I don't think he's that good of a shooter. But that said, last season he shot 42.3% on 78 attempts. So maybe he is just a fantastic catch-and-shoot guy. Whatever. The skills he brings and the energy he provides is something that I think the Pacers could use more often, especially for a team that has called themselves flat and, you know, lethargic at times this season, and they need that force. They need more energy. I just think his skill set, the way he plays and the way he impacts the game, he should be playing in every single game for this Pacers team. And I understand why he doesn't. I'm not going to do what I did earlier this season where I say he should play over this guy or this guy. But I think he should. That is my opinion on him. And this game kind of reinforced all the reasons why I think he should play, because the stuff he can contribute is so valuable. His height's underrated. His athleticism's underrated. He's just a very skilled player, very optimistic guy, and he's been putting in a lot of work this season. Like, we've learned from Rick and from Keelan Martin that on Thanksgiving, I think I said this on the show last week, Keelan and O'Shea went in to the gym to get some work in with assistant coach Gennaro Pargo, get some shots up. O'Shea is in the gym basically every off day. Rick Carlisle said, like, he's really working to get in, and so when he has a game like tonight, it really boosts his confidence and allows him to continue to play this way going forward. I think being in the rotation with Justin out these last couple weeks has really helped O'Shea's confidence and abilities. So we'll see if he stays in the rotation. He said that him and Carlisle have had conversations that, like, some nights he'll play a lot, some nights he won't play at all. Like, they understand the relationship. It's pretty symbiotic. Everybody's on the same page. But certainly seems like, to me at least, in terms of chasing wins and impacting winning, O'Shea Brissett should continue to get lots of minutes going forward. We will see how Rick decides to handle it when Justin comes back and maybe Torrey's work back in the fold. But that's how I view the situation. We will see what actually happens when the Pacers play again tomorrow night against the New York Knicks, who they've split the season series with. Kind of important tiebreaker game. We'll see how that shakes out. Should be very fun. So tomorrow we'll talk Knicks, some other general Pacers topics. Probably have a guest. Haven't determined who yet, though. So we'll figure that out then. But stay tuned for that. Hope everybody has a great day and enjoyed watching the Pacers win a basketball game. We'll be back tomorrow, like always, on the Locked On Pacers podcast. I'm on Twitter at the East NBA. This show's there at Locked On Pacers. Have a great day, everybody, and we will see you tomorrow.